Happy New Year, everybody. On this episode of Unmet Need, I share a specific healthcare AI app. The name of the app is called The Literature. Now, I'm not building this app yet, but I share the idea, and perhaps you, the listener, like this idea, want to build it with me, maybe want to do it yourself and are looking for financing. Either way, let me know. Jeff at jeffsmith.co. Hope you enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome to the next episode of Unmet Need. I'm your host, Jeff Smith. And on today's kickoff, the 2024 year, we're going to talk about a healthcare AI application that I have an idea for. And I thought to kick off the first quarter, it would be fun. I have a lot of ideas, and maybe I'll just get some of them out. And this is an open invitation to physician entrepreneurs and non-physicians alike. If one of these ideas grabs you, let me know. And we can build it together. I can help with financing it, introductions. So, without further ado, here we go. So, the title of this would be something called The Literature. And so, if you've been in the healthcare business and you're talking to surgeons, physicians, usually there's this quote they say, well, the literature says, or in the literature. And it's a real opportunity because nobody really knows the literature. And I know that because I've been doing this for 20 years. And the literature is so poorly understood, in part because it's hard to access the data. You know, to find clinical papers and read them, you need a journal membership so that they then send you a periodical publication that's in print that probably doesn't get read that often. Most print publications don't. Or you have a paywall. Username, password to PubMed. And if we learn anything about Web 1.0 and 2.0, siloed information always wants to be free. The idea is when people talk about the literature, what they're saying is, I have read the clinical paper, the clinical evidence that is relevant to the subject. What they're implying, because there's something authoritative about the literature, it's like the royal we, what they're implying is, I've read all the literature. And I've synthesized the information and I have a grasp on this subject that even though I'm not going to verbalize it, I'm just going to cite the literature. And so the idea would be to build a useful application on top of a ChatGPT-4 Pro multimodal where it would just be on your phone and it could be voice. And you could just say, what is the literature on this topic? And again, it generates something. The whole idea about generative AI, which is what I think is a little more exciting than chatbots, is chatbots are really cool, but it's hard to take all of the information in a chat instance, however insightful it may be, and then have that be a validation for something. And so the idea for the literature is you would just do a report, you'd cite an objection. You know, I'm not going to use statins, I'll get rhabdomyolysis. What does the literature say on this? And it would be a comprehensive, exhaustive list of the literature. Now, it's important to note that it's so difficult, and certainly in orthopedics with something like spinal fusion, it's really difficult to pull the fusion literature because, one, there's just not a lot of fusion studies. But the second reason is each clinical trial has a slightly different definition. And so, in therapeutic areas where there's not consensus on what primary outcomes could be, then you get a little bit of that. So, in the literature, in this app, it would index a lot more on was the article widely distributed and read? What was the academic and scientific rigor of the study design? And really, what is the level of the evidence? Because, and the reason I say that is oftentimes, a prestigious academic institution that does relatively low scientific evidence, you know, single arm, retrospective versus, you know, randomized controlled trial. So, you know, the level of the evidence is what I think has higher value, not which journal published it. And I think one of the things coming out of COVID was institutional credibility is low. Now, I can say as an entrepreneur that's done many clinical trials, you do a heck of a lot of work trying to get a clinical trial designed on writing a protocol. That usually involves a collaboration with physicians and, the end users of your technology. Then you have to go to ethics committees and IRBs. If it's an application for which there is no marketing clearance, an investigational device exemption, an IDE study, that requires a Q-sub. By the time you get a clinical trial done, one, you're in the 5% of the market that's doing clinical trials. It's an industry that doesn't do a lot of clinical trials. And unfortunately, with all the academic research, there's not a lot of public funds available for basic research. So you have industry, which for whatever reason, even though they're the primary funders of all scientific research, industry research is somehow discredited because it has a for-profit incentive. I mean, I think that's an idea that we should start unraveling. Of course, it has a profit incentive, but it's a for-profit company. Bureaucracies have a goal. Institutions have a goal. Nonprofits, it's usually to achieve their mission. And so when a for-profit entity, which is innovating, making new life-changing therapies, whether it be medications, surgeries, software, yes, they're for-profit. And it's that for-profit concept and everything around capitalism with regulation with the FDA and the SEC and the FTC, the DOJ, there's a lot of regulation that says, all right, this is a pure, clean, fun game. So if participants pursue profits, that's a good thing because that means they're investing profits in research and development, doing clinical trials. Clinical trials are answering the questions. Does this work? Does this not work? And then the outcome of that is published. Now, this is a problem. Publication is a gate, it's a gatekeeper, it's a gateway. And clinical journals, they're a little bit like Ivy League schools. Their impact factor, the prestige, has a lot to do with their name. And in a pure system where acceptance to be in a clinical paper or journal will be based on the academic scientific rigor of the paper and how well it's written or how important the discovery. Unfortunately, that's not how it is. And, not to say it's never like that, but clinical publications tend to be the outcome or the output of a society. That society has a certain set of goals and initiatives, nothing wrong with this. And usually, the papers that sort of fit their agenda get in. So you have clinical research that's already hard to do. Then when it's done, it's hard to get it out. I mean, it isn't actually. You can email it. It's, luckily information distribution is pretty easy, but it's what happens at the level where the industry professional and the healthcare provider are having a discussion. And the surgeon says, well, in the literature, dot, dot, dot. Like, raise your hand if you've heard this. In the literature says, tell me about that. Because I can't tell you how many times someone will quote like a 1992 paper with a retrospective analysis. And, the punchline is a predictive percentage of future things happening. I mean, that's like crazy, but that's what happens because medicine, understandably and probably rightfully so, is based on precedent, standing on the shoulders of giants. So, physicians, scientists that reach a certain level of status, people want to celebrate their papers. And my position would be that the credibility, prestige, and all the great work of a particular person, of course, that should go take into consideration. But if you have a no-name investigator that just followed good clinical practice, did an IDE study with the FDA, and they had a big study and they did this whole thing, and the conclusion is contrary to what everybody else thinks, that should not be prevented from being published. That's gatekeeping. I mean, that's the preventing of the dissemination of scientific progress. And so, back to this idea, what would the literature do? This app would be really simple as an industry professional or a surgeon. Before a meeting, after a meeting, maybe as a really great follow-up. If the surgeon says, well, I'd never use that because the literature says there's clotting. But you know what? Doctor, I actually don't know all the literature on clotting. I know our particular product, the incidence was, X out of Y. But is it okay if I follow up? I've got this new app I'm using called The Literature, and I'll just send you a PDF. I'll text it to you. What's your cell phone? The guy or gal usually says okay or no or whatever, but afterwards, just type on the phone, this type of drug, this type of device. It's the physician's objection was this, and then it spits out a PDF, a report that says, here you go. You can text it to the doctor. We did an exhaustive search. Here are the sources. This is how many papers we looked at. And it's all organized, and it gives you the high-level conclusions on the specific topic. As it relates to clotting, the literature, the following points, these are the conclusions one could reach. And this is why. So anyway, that's the idea. So this is a really quick episode. This is only 10 or 15 minutes. I know I do get a little wordy sometimes, but I'm going to have one every week. New different ideas. And again, if you want to actually build this, and this month, actually, OpenAI is supposed to announce their app store. So what that means is builders of apps are going to be able to get a $20 account, or maybe, I don't know if it's 40 now, but for cash, you're going to be able to build an app. And so the challenge, the technical problem of this particular app is access to the clinical papers. Because LexisNexis, PubMed, all the different societies, their clinical papers are their IP. And so if you think about what Google or YouTube or all the companies that scaled very quickly, they didn't do a specific partnership with each of these sources. That's just not how the internet ever did work or ever will. You have a technology that breaks the constraint. And in the case of this particular product idea, because I think this comes up a lot, and there's a very, relevant case right now where the New York Times has sued OpenAI by basically saying that you can't train your model on our information. And so it's going to be appealed, I'm sure. But what happens is, the way I understand it is, if you imagine cookie, like a chocolate chip cookies, they're made by Toll House, and the milk is made by Clover or whatever. Now, if you put all these things together and you create a new product, so let's say that's PubMed and this is LexisNexis or something. If you take information and create a new product or a new insight, that is creating a new work. It's that, then that's different. But in any event, give it some thought. And if anybody is interested in this, I'm at jeff@jeffsmith.co. And again, thanks for entertaining the idea. All right, so to wrap up, it's really about building. This is the time now to build. This has never been a time as an entrepreneur where you have this opportunity to build on top of billions of dollars of infrastructure. Billions. Now, like that existed with AWS and cloud. The difference is then you have a whole labor base of these language learning models. And it's incredible. So my challenge to myself and to anyone, I started doing this, is get access to one of these, like ChatGPT. The specific thing is called GPT Builder. So you just go into your OpenAI account, ChatGPT. You do have to have the $20 paid account. And I know there's, some constraints on how many they put out. And I don't have a lot of experience yet with the new Google. But the point is once you get access to one of these things, and there's 100 million accounts, so people are getting them. That's, I guess, yeah. They're not all Americans, but that's a lot of people worldwide already. And I think it went up to 200 million. But in any event, when you go there, in the top left, there's something called, I think it's called Explore, and then it's just custom GPTs. So check that out. And what I'll do is, when this episode comes out, I'll put a link to some things that I've been working on. All right. So hope you enjoyed this episode of Unmet Need. And as always, thanks for listening. All right, folks, thanks for listening to another episode of Unmet Need. If you like the idea for the literature, contact me, Jeff@jeffsmith.co.